This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT of Easton, will join us. We will go over all of his NFL picks for the weekend, talk some Bill Belichick to UNC, which I will get to in a minute, get his thoughts on the college football playoff. But I will start here with what was just a strange Thursday night game, the first game all season where neither team scored a touchdown. And if I was going to tell you, hey, there's going to be some game between two teams that, you know, neither team scores, this would be one of the last matchups you'd imagine that being, because the Rams, you know, good offense, not that good on defense. Niners with all their weapons, you just don't think of this. You know, they play out west, you don't think of weather being a factor, but weather was a factor early with the, the rain clearly affected it. Deebo Samuel with a terrible drop. A couple things from this game. The 49ers, any idea, any pipe dream of them making a run, running the table, that can wait. That will wait till next year. And you just look at, you know, their roster, the age of their roster, they're going to have to pay Purdy. You wonder if they've missed their window a little bit here, you know, to win a title. 2019, they're in the Super Bowl with a lead and the ball in the fourth quarter, a 10-point lead with the ball. Obviously, last year, a game they could have won. They've had a million chances here to win a Super Bowl, and you just wonder if that ship has sailed. As far as the Rams, it's probably going to come down to Rams-Seahawks Week 18 for the NFC West. I would think that, just because if the Rams, having beat Seattle already, if they beat them again, that carries the tiebreaker. So there's so much weight on that, where Seattle would need to be up two games going into that game to be clear of the Rams, where the Rams can't just win it, you know, with a win head to head. So that'll probably be the Week 18 flex game, the last game of the season, the NBC Sunday night game, if things go, you know, according to plan, and if that game is for the division title. So, you know, I don't know what to make of Rams. You're going to hear this phrase a lot: team nobody wants to play. I always think that's sort of an empty compliment, because you never hear about the team that everybody wants to play. It's sort of a way of praising them without actually picking them. Like, all right, if you want to pick them over the Eagles or the Lions, then pick them. But I feel like it's a little bit of a cliche, a little bit of an empty compliment. Hey, I know what people mean. They can give somebody a tough game. They could be dangerous. I get it. They played Detroit tough last year in the playoffs. They played Detroit tough week one of this season. They played, they beat Minnesota. So they're upside with Stafford, the receivers, McVay, is formidable. Are they like a legitimate contender? Probably not, but good season. I mean, they were dead and buried. They looked like that was just going to be a lost season. Same thing as last year, where, you know, McVay, his teams just get better as the year goes on. And McVay's a hell of a coach. They've got a good team. I don't know that they're a threat more than, you know, winning a game or so once they get in. So that's the Thursday night game. Again, very strange game. No touchdowns between those two teams. You just wouldn't expect that, you know, going in. And I hadn't heard anything about the weather being a factor. I think it kind of caught everybody off guard. Deebo Samuel, a terrible drop. The 49ers, I'll say this too about the 49ers, just the final thing. When they sit there and watch the playoffs in a month or so, it's going to be a tough pill to swallow, because they are better than a lot of teams that are going to make it. And they just have missed. They have found so many different ways to lose games. The first Rams game where they were up big late, kickers missing kicks. I mean, you name it, they have just melted down and just various ways and found ways to lose games. So they're going to have a lot to think about this offseason when they're not in the playoffs and they're sitting at home. So that's the Thursday night football. Before I get to my picks, man, I had Mike Sando on last Friday and I asked him, hey, where do you think Belichick's coaching next year? And he said the Giants. And, you know, I was surprised by that answer, but I would have needed about 100 guesses, and I don't think I would have landed on the University of North Carolina. I'm so surprised it came out of nowhere. And to add a wrinkle to it, I'm sure some people listen to me on VEASAN, Michael Lombardi, a coworker of mine, a friend of mine, is going to be the GM at UNC. So I'm rooting for them. I think it'll be fun. Boy, it's very hard to sit here and say it's going to work. It's definitely not going to work. It's a strange fit. There's really no precedent. I mean, you have a guy who's in his, you know, mid-70s going to coach college for the first time. It's a different era of college with the NIL, the transfer portal. But if anybody can figure out, I do trust Belichick. I don't love the staff, you know, underneath him. Some of the assistant coaches, you know, he's going to bring Patricia with him. Patricia never coached in college, things like that. So I don't know, but I think it'll generally work. I think he'll get the talent. I think he can coach. I'm rooting for him. I'm surprised. I guess I'm not surprised. I guess the writing was on the wall that, hey, I'm either not going to get an NFL job, or I'm not going to get the NFL job I want. I don't want to go coach the Giants or the Saints or, you know, one of these teams. It's just, he probably didn't want to be in a situation where he's taking a job just to take a job. You know, you have no quarterback. Sando mentioned the idea last week of, hey, people don't want Belichick in their building because you lose your juice as the guy who's running the team. You hire Belichick, it's going to be Belichick's, you know, team. It's going to be his call. It's going to be his program, basically. And that's a little dicey. These teams don't want to yield the power. They work very hard. These guys get, you know, they work very hard to get the power. They don't want to just give it away to Belichick. So, you know, if things went really well and the right job opened, could Belichick leave? I know he said at the press conference Thursday, hey, I didn't come here to leave. I came here to win. Of course, he's going to say that, and I tend to believe him, but I'd be curious a year or two down the road if the right job opened, he'd, you know, go back to the NFL, try to chase the record. So we will see. I'll get to JVT in a minute. Just quickly, my picks. I'm going to go under 43 Steelers-Eagles as we get into the picks for the weekend. I went away from this. I was on this a lot early in the season, the Steelers-unders. And it was good to me. I don't know. For some reason, I got off it. I think I lost it once or twice. And I was just, yeah, I'm off it now. And they've actually scored a little better than I expected. But I think this game against Philly is going to be a game where Pittsburgh tries to grind it out. Defense, special teams. Philly likes to run the ball. You know, Pittsburgh has some experience defending these mobile quarterbacks. They defend, they've seen Jaylen Daniels. They've seen Lamar Jackson. They have both of those guys to a combined under 50 yards rushing. So I do like the under there. I'm leery of betting against Kansas City because I don't feel like I've profited from this streak of not covering, and I don't want to just jump on it late and all this time later. All right, Kansas City never covers. Let me bet against them, and this will be the one week they cover. But I'm going to take Cleveland plus the four. I just we've seen Cleveland play up at home against the Ravens, you know, beating them. They beat Pittsburgh on a Thursday night, and Kansas City just defensively doesn't look that good. Their offense is kind of sluggish, so. At some point, you know what, you just got to, they're easy to predict. They're going to find a way to grind out a 2-3 point win. They're going to win. They're not going to cover. So hopefully I'm not a week too late on this, but I will take the Browns plus the four. And I have a feeling the Lions are due to lose one. This would be their 12th straight win. It's just teams don't win 12 in a row with the NFL. It's very hard to do. They were close to losing on Thanksgiving. I know they had a big lead early, but easily could have lost at the end. Easily could have lost last week to Green Bay. Buffalo's off of a loss. Detroit's banged up and just not that good right now defensively. So I have a feeling Buffalo gives Detroit their second loss. I will take the 2.5. And plus, you know, with a game, and this is the highest total of the season in the NFL, 54.5. If one of these teams is down 7 with a minute or so to go and they score a touchdown, will they go for 2 and go for the win? Then it lands on 1 either way. So that 2.5 could be valuable, especially with Campbell, who likes to go for it. And, you know, if that were the situation, I wouldn't put it past him to go for it, go for the 2 and go for the win. So I will go with those three, under 43 in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. I will take the Browns plus 4, and I will take the Buffalo Bills plus 2.5. Those are the picks as we wind down the final month or so of the season. Start to see, you know, who's in, who's out. We got a pretty good idea in both conferences. It's just a matter of, you know, the seeding. And I do think, man, Baltimore is plus 185 to win the division. I know I've been wrong on Pittsburgh all year, completely underestimated, underrated them. Pittsburgh schedule's coming up at Philly, at Baltimore, the Chiefs. Baltimore at plus 185 to win the division, I don't think is a bad bet. I do think Baltimore has a chance here to, you know, to get back in the mix. They don't have the tiebreaker head-to-head. They don't have the conference record, but the schedule is certainly favorable. Similar to, remember, 5 or 6 weeks ago, I was talking about Tampa versus Atlanta, where Tampa was 2 or 3 out at the time, but you look at the schedule and say, hey, looking at the schedule, Tampa could be in first place in like a month, and lo and behold, that's what happened. So similar sort of scenario there. I'll probably be wrong underestimating Tomlin, but I do think the plus 185 is worth a shot. We'll see what JVT thinks next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast, and he is back. You can catch him on VSiN Primetime. He's our buddy. It is Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, what's up, man? How are you? And we'll get to the NFL in a second, but I think we have to start with University of North Carolina football, Bill Belichick, now the head coach, and our buddy Michael Lombardi, the GM. Your reaction, and how do you think this ultimately goes?
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately it comes down to Lombardi's profile really took off when I hosted Betting Across America with him. So I think he has me to thank for his relationship with Bill Belichick. No, like, it's cool, man. It's cool for Lombardi, obviously. And I think it's an interesting way to handle things. We'll see how everything goes. I mean, by all accounts, Belichick wants to turn that into essentially a minor league football program. Now, what that entails and what is different in college than it would be in the other programs, we'll see. But to have a GM of sorts and to see what Michael's job is going to be and how that goes, I'm very interested in the whole thing. How it will go, like what I think, look, I don't know if they're going to be winning national championships, but can Belichick regularly lead over the course of the next 2 to 3 years? Because I don't think he's going to be there that long, one would assume, to 8 to 10 wins and competitive and games against some big teams. Yeah, maybe. But it also comes back to, Will, like, again, like, what's the goal, right? Is the goal to go out there and win national championships, or is the goal to become just a feeder pipeline into the National Football League? Because those two things aren't necessarily synonymous, right? If it's a lot about development, winning might not come at the clip that many expect. So I am very fascinated to see how it goes. And as many have made the joke, I am fascinated next year to watch North Carolina go to Charlotte and watch Bill Belichick prowl the sidelines against the Charlotte 49ers in North Carolina blue. And it's going to be crazy.
TCU August 30th in North Carolina. I'm fascinated. You know, as you mentioned, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he builds. I mean, there's 12 playoff teams. We're going to move to what, 14 or 16 soon. I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, beats out Dave Doran and out coaches Dabo Sweeney and, you know, builds enough, recruits enough talent, builds enough talent where he can compete and win an ACC title. That is not far fetched. I mean, I don't, you know, the Patricias of the world, some of these other guys, I thought his son did a pretty good job this year, but man, some of these guys just don't have any experience in the college game recruiting, but I'm not betting against Bill Belichick. I did want him to see him get like another shot in the pros with a, you know, maybe a Cincinnati or a better team, but hey, he's going to get to coach, and this makes North Carolina games fascinating. I'm shocked at everything happened at the Lombardi aspect of it. When I heard, I think Belichick was on with McAfee on Monday or Tuesday, and I heard a clip of it. I don't listen to it, but I heard a clip of it where he's like, I'm going to bring a GM with me. And that kind of like my antenna got raised, but I didn't really put two and two together. And man, it's just, 24 hours later, Lombardi is the GM of UNC football. Just crazy.
Well, you know, it's funny. So I think I can say this because the news is out. And if not, who cares? I might get in trouble. But so behind the scenes of VSiN, we had posted a story when Lombardi, you know, of course, when it was announced. So we post the story up on VSiN, up, you know, on Twitter and everything.
Right.
That story had been sitting in the drafts on the back end of the website. So like there were people that had found out like well before the announcement, because, you know, you work on the website, you're putting stories up, and on the back end, you're like, oh, what's this drafted story that's just sitting here that's not published? And wow. Then you pull it up and you read it. You're like, oh, wow. Okay. Michael might be leaving here, huh? So I know a couple of people, like I think Zach Cohen found out that way. So it had been something I've been sitting on for a little bit, but no, it was cool. And I think to your point, bringing it back to football really quickly, I would have liked to see Bill back in the NFL only because I think one of the underrated aspects about the way his career in the National Football League ended was he did do a good job with New England in his last few years. I know a lot of people kept going to the low-hanging fruit of like, well, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl, and he didn't. Bro, he drug Mac Jones to the postseason and made him look like an adequate quarterback. In the last 2 years of his tenure there in New England, if you combine the two seasons by EPA standards, that was the third best defense in the National Football League. He still had plenty left in terms of being able to develop defensively, at least. I think that's also my big concern. You know, the criticism of Belichick in the National Football League is that, look, I think it's fair criticism, he didn't have any idea how to find, draft, scout, and develop offensive personnel. Like, that just wasn't his thing. They never had good offensive skill position players in his time there. They never really hit on those first-round picks for offensive skill players. And so does that translate to college? Like, are you going to have trouble to find those skill positions? But, you know, that's obviously where a Lombardi and others in that front office come in to help him maybe offset some of the weaknesses when it comes to finding offensive talent around the country.
Yeah, it's crazy. And there is a number of some of these. Look, when you have a highly publicized coach like this, these books are going to try to take advantage and try to generate some action. So there is a win total up for next year, over under 6.5 wins. The over is juiced. I haven't seen like a playoff number. A national title seems like a stretch, but I will be curious. I mean, maybe just for a rooting interest, what their like playoff number is. And I haven't gone through the schedule, and it's just, I mean, it's hard enough anyway to know like who's going to be on which of these teams. But
right.
I don't know. The betting implication is interesting. What like top of your head, what do you think a playoff number, ACC number would be coming in next year?
I mean, shoot. So what the win total was, what, 6.5, right? Well, yeah. -170. So I mean, you're getting in some, I would assume, getting into some double digits in terms of what you're looking at there. Like you said, it depends on.
Although they might shave it because people want to know, hey, I want to bet Belichick. There's going to be some public attention. So they might shave it knowing that, which concerns me.
Yeah. So, I mean, like college football playoff, I mean, I still think you'd probably get like 9-10 to 1 on them to make the playoff. And then to win the ACC, probably one of the, you know, shorter odds there. What do you think, like 8-1, 6-1, something like that, depending on what the other teams look like?
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to see when they come out in these books. Like I said, they you know, they're quicker to post up because, hey, that, from their perspective, they can tie up your money for a bet that, you know, based on definition is not likely to win. And they just, you know, they hold that money for a long time. They generate the action. It generates publicity of, hey, do you see the odds on North Carolina? Like, we're talking about it now. Hey, their win total 6.5. So it's good for, you know, it's good for publicity and it's good for business.
It's funny too. So we had Matt Grill on primetime yesterday, and it's how the world works with odds making now. He tells us, he's like, yeah, somebody in Matt Grill, for your audience that doesn't know, is one of the senior traders over there at DraftKings. And he tells us, he's like, oh, yeah, somebody from our content team reached out and said they needed odds on Belichick to have, or excuse me, for the North Carolina to have a win total. So that's why they posted it. Think about that. 2024, right. The sports book put it up because part of their content team wanted the win total. So sure. It is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and it does make it more interesting when you can put a number to it and just, hey, yep. I have a talking point of, hey, 6.5 wins or you know, the title odds and the playoff odds will be up, you know, I would think within the next couple of weeks, just because, hey, you throw it out there and you see what, you know, what the reaction is. What NFL this week, what do you like?
So I think there were two games for sure, both totals, and a little bit on the side too. But we'll go with my guys first, Indy and Denver. I think that game over the total of about 44, 43.5, and then taking the points with Indianapolis for in that game. First off, for the total, it's the side of, you know, of the two I like the most. You look, Denver, I think, is going to be able to score on Indianapolis defensively. Like, the Colts run a very vanilla system. I mean, the aforementioned Michael Lombardi wrote a great piece many, many weeks ago on Gus Bradley's defense and how simplistic it is. Doesn't change the fronts. You're always running at the same front. You're looking at the same scheme. That thing can be had, and other teams can score on you. I mean, we saw New England do it. We've seen plenty of offenses do it against Indianapolis. They trust that Sean Payton's going to be able to scheme up some stuff here. But on the flip side, look, we've seen Denver – we've seen them bend and get broken a couple of times here. Jameis Winston and the Browns did it. We obviously saw the Ravens did it. And we know that Indianapolis has been much better the last 3 weeks since Anthony Richardson's come back. But it's not even just because, you know, since he's come back, he's actually, by PFF standards, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But, like, I don't know what happened with Shane Steichen throughout the year, but Steichen has finally started to lean into, oh, I've got like a 6'4 freak of an athlete, so let's start using some of these designed runs. Let's run read options. Let's do some of that. At the beginning of the year before he got benched, a vast majority of Anthony Richardson's rushing yards came via scramble. Now a majority of his rushing yards are coming via designed runs since he got back into the lineup, according to PFF. So they've changed the way that they're running this offense, and that has led to some better offensive play, and it's made Richardson look a lot more comfortable. So I think that you're going to get that game to go over, and I also think you're going to be able to get Indianapolis inside of this number of 4. This team's a lot more adequate since the change back to Anthony Richardson, since the shift in the offense, and they're playing for something. I mean, this is a big game, man. You know, you win this game, and then you get that head-to-head result over Denver, and you just need them to drop one more, and all of a sudden you're in a spot to grab a wild card. So, and by the way, not out of the woods is the Houston Texans in that division either, considering the way they're playing. So, but I like that game over, like the Colts. And then the other side, as we mentioned, Chiefs and Browns over the total as well. You've got some real issues with the secondary if you're Kansas City. 24th, 25th, an EPA per pass by opponents. You saw Aiden O'Connell tear him up. You saw Bryce Young tear him up. And Jameis Winston, with his aggressive style of quarterbacking, is going to be able to go after the secondary in a really big way. And on the flip side, while this offense hasn't been great, you should be able to move the ball against Cleveland. I also think, too, your percentage of getting some shortened drives is increased against Jameis, because we know how Jameis Winston operates. I think you're going to be able to get this game over the total, too. So Chiefs, Browns over, Colts, Broncos over, and Colts plus the points would be the top of my list.
Now we're recording this before Rams 49ers, but I'll ask it anyway. Anyone in first place in their division that you think is vulnerable? So in other words, anyone, you know, a long shot, anyone with a plus sign to steal one of these divisions, do you think is worth a bet?
I mean, I think it's got to be the one I just mentioned, right? The AFC South. I mean, like, the problem is, like, the Texans have the two wins in hand over Indianapolis, and I think they're in a good situational spot here against Miami. Remember, like, Houston had been practicing since they were in the Hall of Fame game. So, like, they opened a practice earlier before everybody else. They have a late bye. So I think it's really good that you kind of get some rest and you get ready to go to take on Miami. So I kind of like them in this spot, but you don't really trust them. And if they fall flat on their face here against Miami, and then all of a sudden you're looking at a Colts team that, if they pull off a win, Colts are sitting at 7-7. You're a team that has looked pretty bad. Your schedule isn't the easiest down the stretch. I think you're probably there. And then, of course, you mentioned, like, the NFC West. Like, the 49ers kind of proved to a lot of people, like, I think that we conflate sometimes failures by injury, just in general, to failures, right? So a lot of people just thought this 49ers team was done. Like, no, man, like they're injured. Like, they're beat up. Their top two running backs are on IR. Like, Trent Williams isn't playing. Nick Bosa is missing time. But they showed that they're still a very, very adequate team that is better than some of the bottom dwellers in the NFL by beating the crap out of the Bears. And if this guy's going to start to get healthy in Brock Purdy and his shoulder's not going to be as sore, then all of a sudden you're looking at that team going like, man, like that team can totally rip off the next like, four wins and get back into this thing and win that division. So I'm kind of maybe like 3 weeks ago, I bet them to win the Super Bowl. So I'm kind of maybe hoping to speak that into an existence because injuries have been part of it. But if they win this game and then they start to get healthy, I don't know how you're not looking at San Francisco.
Any awards favorites you think are vulnerable?
No, I mean, yes, but I don't think I'm going to be right. And I mean that by like offensive rookie of the year, right? And again, this is probably me just making a stump speech for a ticket that I've got. But when you look at Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and the top of that awards market, they have had fine seasons, but neither of them are the best at their position, obviously. Brock Bowers is. Brock Bowers is like the best tight end in football right now. Brock Bowers is among the best receivers in the NFL right now. And I was talking with Doug Kazarian, you know, onlyplayers.com, and we were chatting about this the other night, and I told him how I have this Brock Bowers at 35-1 ticket, and I was a little bitter that I'm probably not going to win this, even though I think he should. And he told me, he's like, no, I think he's going to win. I don't know if Doug's right, but I do think that there's going to be more people that look at Bowers' season and go, dude, he's among the best in the NFL at his position and among the best in receiving yards and overall. That's got to be worth something. How you can be one of the best at your position but not be the best rookie is weird. And I think he's got a higher chance of winning that thing than I think most people think.
Yeah, I think I'd probably vote for him if I had a vote, which I don't, at least not yet. I think two things that play against him, obviously the position, and there's just such a bias towards the quarterbacks, which there shouldn't be. Yep. And the fact that they might have the first pick in the draft, which again, that probably shouldn't matter either. But when you have both of them working against them, and Daniels has been, I don't know, he's been so, well, like once you get the lead in these things, I don't know, does the perception take over and like, oh, it's Daniels to lose or Nick's going to lead into the playoffs? I would bet against him winning, but I don't think it's impossible. I just don't think it's likely.
Oh, no, I think you're right. Like I say this all the time in the NBA where the narrative for guys winning awards is set so much earlier than people realize. And so you get all these people who like try to make the case for guys to make late pushes for awards. And generally we always see like, dude, it's not going to happen. Right. I mean, we just saw it for NL Rookie of the Year in Major League Baseball, where a lot of people thought Skeens actually eventually fell off and wasn't going to win it. And then all of a sudden he like just destroyed it in terms of what the votes that he got. We knew like he was going to win this the whole time. And it actually turned out to be true. And I think you're right there. I think one of the things that is going to be pretty interesting for Bowers, and to your point about being the first overall pick, I think that almost works in his favor. Look who's played quarterback for him. You know what I mean? Like this guy has a rotation of Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, and it might be Desmond Ridder at some point. We'll see if Aiden O'Connell is going to be healthy to play. It seems like he will be, but regardless, like he's been doing this with the worst quarterback position and rotation in the NFL. And I think that does mean something. And I don't think rookie of the year should be tied to or towards records. Again, this is all I think. Voters are simpletons. Maybe they're going to do it, but I think how bad the situation has been in Las Vegas almost gives him like a leg up because holy smokes, like he doesn't have Sean Payton, right? Calling plays for him, or he doesn't have, why is the name escaping me? Who's the offense coordinator for Washington?
Kingsbury.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Kingsbury calling plays for him, right? Like he's got Gutalytics, Antonio Pierce at the helm. Like this has been a nightmare for them. So I think that kind of helps him in a way, but maybe I'm just being too positive about it.
Yeah, I have no problem with the MVP being a quarterback award because the word valuable is in it, and it's just hard to be more valuable than the best quarterback. But when it comes to rookie of the year, I don't think there should be such a position bias like there is. So we'll see. I'm rooting for your ticket there. I think Bowers is the right choice. We'll see what happens. A couple quick ones before you get out of here. College football, any takeaways from the selection? I don't think I've talked to you since. And what's your favorite bet, if any, for round one?
Yeah, so nothing really crazy. I'm glad SMU's in. Like, look, I understand the whole strength of schedule thing, and you know that you have your victories. Look, just don't get blown out by Oklahoma. You don't lose that game if you're Alabama. Guess what? You're in, and SMU's out. It's a really simple concept. And this whole conversation, which has really graded me, is the well, I guess we won't schedule anybody tough. You didn't, right? It's not like we're talking about your losses in non-conference play. We're talking about your losses in conference. You lost to Vandy and Oklahoma. You just can't do that. So glad that they're in. in terms of SMU. Initial thoughts, so I did bet under 47.5 in Ohio State, Tennessee. I also took a bit of Tennessee plus the points there. It, outside of just the narrative stuff, I think one of the big matchups that's going to be pretty fascinating is Tennessee's defensive line against Ohio State's offensive line. And you know, there's a lot of talent at the edge for Tennessee, but remember, their second their leader is along the edge, but their second leader in terms of pressure is along the interior. And that's an interior of the offensive line for Ohio State that is going to be a shuffling deck. And they haven't even decided who their starting trio is going to be inside yet. So I think that that's going to be a matchup that really slows down Will Howard in this offense. And on the flip side, Tennessee actually has not been great in conference play just against SEC opponents. So just in SEC play, they were 11th in yards per play on offense. So I think it's going to be a pretty ugly game. Get that under the total. I think Tennessee is going to be able to stay inside of that number. Those are the only two games I've bet so far. And I thought DraftKings had some pretty good markets. I put a little on Oregon over a half win at minus 130 in the college football playoff. I think Ohio State's still pretty vulnerable if they move on. I don't think 1.5 is a fair number. I think that should be a little bit higher. So I think the probability of Oregon winning that game is higher than we think. And I also think the probability of Ohio State losing the game to Tennessee is higher than we think. So I thought there was a little value on Oregon just getting a single win in the college football playoff at $130.
Yeah, going back to your point about Bama and then saying, hey, we're not going to schedule anybody going forward. That was, he set himself up to be, you know, made fun of because, like he said, they all their losses were in conference. I did get where he was coming from where, hey, if you're just going to reward teams that just stack wins, we're just going to stack wins going forward. So I did get that. But I mean, obviously the quote looks bad when, you know, your losses are in conference and you're talking about out of conference stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like stack the wins in conference then. Don't lose to Vandy. Don't lose to Oklahoma. Like, because I'm a believer of like your losses should hurt you more than wins should help you, I guess, to an extent. So like, for example, like, dude, I'm sorry, but nobody has a worse loss than Notre Dame, right? You can't lose at home to a 500 MAC team and then still, like, here they are, like, ranked as high as they are. Like, that should have massively hurt Notre Dame in a quest for a college football playoff. But again, they take care of business, so they're going to be there. But like, losses should matter at some point, and you can't lose the way you did three times if you're Alabama and expect to get in. Because then at that point, then let's just put the four SEC teams in like before the season started. It's like your resume has to matter to an extent in terms of the losses that you take.
Right, and it's just such a small sample size sport where it gets tedious with the debates where the pro SMU people can say, hey, you lost games, you should be punished. They're absolutely right. And then the anti-SMU people say, yeah, you played an easy schedule, and those people are right. So you just go around in circles, and a lot of it is, you know, not us. I think we do a good job of just remaining neutral, but a lot of people, it's just, you know, rooted in their bias, who they root for, what conference they root for, things like that. Anything NBA we should be betting on, and who, if anybody, prevents a Boston-OKC final? Is that just inevitable at this point, barring an injury, barring a major upset in the playoffs? I know it's
so long away. One of the things that I've been harping on, and I bet him again last night, and holy smokes, I don't know if you saw the final score or watching the game at all, but I love this Atlanta team. Like, Atlanta is awesome. They have these three wings that are out there with Trae Young that have wreaked havoc against opponents. Jalen Johnson, I think I brought him up to you before for most improved player. Again, yesterday, like 20-16-7. The kid was absolutely awesome. But with him, with Dyson Daniels, with DeAndre Hunter, the Hawks have been really kind of running roughshod on some of these opponents. And yesterday against the Knicks, man, third quarter, I think they outscored the Knicks 34-18. They were a 7.5-point dog, ended up winning by about 8. I think it was 108-100. This Hawks team is dangerous. And they get Milwaukee here in the NBA Cup. I'm going to bet them again. I've kind of been riding this Hawks train, and I would very much recommend anybody who's kind of getting into the NBA to monitor this team because they're very good. I also added them at plus 210 to make the playoffs. I think they're at like minus 130 now or something like that. I think they're a really dangerous team, but I don't know if they're dangerous enough to upend the apple cart in the East. But I will say this, they are 7-1 against, I think it's New York, Boston, Cleveland, and Milwaukee. The Hawks are. They're a very good team. And if you remember, at the start of NBA Cup play, they beat Boston outright as a 16.5-point underdog without Trae Young. That's how good this team can be. So I would look out for that team to be kind of pesky in some of these best of sevens. But outside of that, it's hard to really pick a team to upend Boston because the East just looks so vulnerable. The Knicks aren't good on defense. The Cleveland Cavaliers, I think, have limitations. The Bucks don't have a guard that can defend. So I think you're probably pretty clear there. In the West, it's a little bit more difficult just because there's so many of these good teams that are kind of on the same level with OKC. But I would still say when the smoke clears, we're going to get those two playing each other, barring any sort of injury.
And you think we see a big trade before the deadline? It's quieted down. I know the apron makes the deals more complicated. There's rumors of Butler. I know, you know, there's some people that think the Lakers should break up there too. It just doesn't seem like that's their, you know, MO. Anyone you think actually gets moved here in the next couple months?
Yeah, I think that that's actually Butler. I think that's probably the biggest name that ends up getting swapped around at the deadline, because it's just like you mentioned with the apron. It is, and the second apron as well on some of these teams, it is very, very hard for teams to actually make legitimate moves. So you're going to see Butler get moved. You know, you talk about futures prices and teams that could maybe upend the apple cart. We're going to see them play in the NBA Cup quarterfinals on Saturday. So before the season started, Houston got like a treasure trove of assets. And I bet them at 150-1 to win the finals, because I thought that they were just going to try to make a move. And I thought it was going to be Kevin Durant or Devin Booker. Well, it turns out it might be Jimmy Butler, but that still might be enough. This is like a dynamite defensive team. They had a ridiculous comeback yesterday against Golden State where they were down 90-84. They won 91-90. They're a really good defensive team. And if they add like an ISO scorer like Butler, who can also help them on the defensive end, I would very much look out for Houston maybe being the, dare I say, second or third best team actually in the Western Conference. So I think that Jimmy Butler trade might happen. And I think if you're Houston, you can get him for pretty cheap. I would probably be knocking on the door of Miami to see what they're going to be willing to give up. And I think that's probably the move to make. And from a future standpoint, there's worse tickets to have in your pocket than the Houston Rockets to win the finals, or excuse me, the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, we had Chris Massera, our buddy, on. I think you have him on with Humans sometimes. He was on the day the season started or the night before the season started, and he was talking about Houston, how that was one of his favorite overs, one of his favorite teams.
Yep.
Yeah, they NBA kind of goes in and out of the clouds. I know you're a diehard, but for most people, I think it goes in and out of the clouds, and as football starts to die down and we're in the last month of the regular season, and then you start to get to like, hey, no more weeknights, and NBA college basketball, they start to take more center stage here in the next month or so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is where I start to really pick up our the NBA, or excuse me, the college basketball watching. You know what I mean? Like last night, I like to hate watch Green Bay. I want to see Doug Gottlieb fail. So like, you know, watching Green Bay get smoked by Milwaukee yesterday was absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, grinding through Horizon League basketball and whatnot, this is the time to do it.
JVT, you're the best, man. Appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
At me, JVT, on pretty much all social media platforms, at VSiN Primetime, VSiN.com, you know, the deals, just all those. And if you're a Vegas local, I'm on ESPN Las Vegas as well.
All right, JVT, appreciate it.
You got it, man. Thank you.
All right, thanks to JVT. Thank you guys for listening. Rate, review, subscribe if you get a chance. Those do help us out. We will be back Monday. See you then.